next New Ellen, Heidi Klum from America's Got Talent, plus Melissa Etheridge and Olivia Munn from The Predator.
Just the thought of it makes me shudder.
Ellen, today at 3 on NBC4. And
we know your life is bumper to bumper. You need someone working for you. That's why NBC4 gives you 2.5 hours of news starting at 4 p.m. We're working around your afternoons with breaking news and the most accurate weather in town. NBC4 News at 4 for you.
Welcome to Travel Itch Radio, the show that lets you scratch your lust for travel from the friendly confines of your home. I'm Dan Schlossberg, along with my longtime friend and broadcast partner, Maggie Linton.
And this is the 274th episode of Travel Itch Radio. Every week at 8 p.m. East, we interview hoteliers, transportation executives, city, state, and national tourism officials, authors, writers, broadcasters, and others involved in the world of travel.
And tonight, we are especially honored to be visiting with Captain Beverly Bass, real-life inspiration for the hit Broadway musical Come From Away. Welcome, Beverly, to Travel Itch Radio.
Thank you so much. I'm thrilled to be with y'all tonight.
Okay, before we get into the normal questioning, I want to let our listeners know that you're still flying. We went back to flying again, what, last April, right?
I am, almost a year ago, and I'm fortunate to be flying with another American Airlines retired captain, so we crew a jet out of Oklahoma City.
Oh, that's great.
That is terrific. Okay, Bev, let's give our listeners a little background. Right after the 9/11 attacks, the FAA grounded all flights with 38 jumbo jets, and four military planes landing at Gander International Airport in Newfoundland. That meant 6,759 passengers, 11 dogs, 9 cats, and even 2 apes suddenly showed up in a town of 9,651 people. I know captains always have to keep calm, but how did you handle it?
Oh, you know, it was just an unprecedented event for all of us, and I think we were really just operating minute by minute, hour by hour, day by day, because, you know, we didn't really have a checklist, we didn't have anything that gave us any guidance, because obviously an event like this had never occurred before, and so we were just doing what we were supposed to do, just, you know, being in charge of our airplane and taking care of our passengers and our crew.
Well, Gander used to be a refueling stop for transatlantic flights. Had you ever stopped there before?
No, you know, all of us who fly international, most especially Europe, we are very familiar with Gander, Halifax, St. John's, all of those cities and airports, because they are the airports that we use anytime we have an in-flight emergency in that area. So we're familiar with them, but I will also tell you that most airline pilots, will go their whole career without ever landing in any one of those cities because of the reliability of the jets today. So we're aware of them, but most of the time we never get to land there.
So Gander, I guess, could be called a flyover, huh?
Exactly. Yeah. Yes.
So is it true that all passengers were confined to their cabins for 24 hours so that security could verify no terrorists were aboard? I mean, how difficult was that?
Well, every airplane was different. I was the 36th out of 38 to land.
Wow.
And, you know, they just had to figure out a way to get everybody deplaned. And one of the biggest problems is that the only way to do that was the school buses, which would come in from all over Newfoundland. And the school bus drivers were actually on strike. So it took some negotiating to get them to come off the picket line, which they gladly agreed to do because they knew it was the only way to transport the passengers. And so, you know, it just took a while to coordinate everything, and every passenger and crew member had to be registered by the Red Cross because they needed to know where everybody was going to be staying. So my passengers and I were actually on the airplane for 28 hours.
Wow.
Oh.
Yeah.
That's
Bev, once you're allowed to, Yeah, it is. Once you're allowed to disembark, I understand the Canadians both welcomed and consoled the passengers with meals, clothes, beds, diapers, prescription drugs, all without charging anyone anything. I'm sure you could explain it better, so why don't you go ahead?
Well, it started when we were on the airplanes. They delivered everything you could imagine, just what you said, diapers, formula. They delivered nicotine patches. And, of course, people's prescriptions were in their luggage, which had been checked and was still in the belly, and nobody had access to any of that. So they filled 2,000 prescriptions,
wow,
and nobody was charged a dime for any of it. And we actually got off the airplane at 7:30 in the morning and on September 12th. And when we walked into the terminal itself was lined with so many tables, I couldn't even count them. And it was just stacked full of food. So it told me that the people of Gander had literally stayed up all night cooking for 7,000 people. It was incredible.
Wow.
That's amazing.
Dan?
We're talking with Captain Beverly Bass, formerly of American Airlines and now flying a private jet. Bev, how long were you stranded in Gander, and was there enough hotel space for everybody?
Well, you know, we got there, obviously, on September 11th, and we didn't leave until Saturday, which was September 15th. So we were there 5 days. And there are only 500 motel rooms in Gander. They don't really have an infrastructure, and they don't have hotels. So 500 motel rooms. And so really people had to be put everywhere. They were on the fire station floor. They were in churches, schools, people's houses. My crew and I were at the Comfort Inn, and my passengers were on the floor at the Knights of Columbus Lodge. And, you know, we had them take the blankets and pillows off the airplane because that's what they were going to be sleeping on.
Wow. Well, how do you like the way your story has been portrayed in Come From Away?
Oh,
and how
my
cool
God.
Is that, huh?
Who would have ever guessed? You know, I've often said that when we launched out of there, you know, that Saturday, September 15th, if somebody had said to me, you know, 16 years later, you're going to be watching this on Broadway, I would have thought they were completely nuts. I could not have ever imagined that this story was going to play out the way that it has.
Well, is it true that you've seen it about 100 times?
I've only seen it 99 times.
Well, you got to get back.
I know. And my 100th time will be on March the 11th, and that's going to be a very special showing, that matinee, because that will be celebrating 1 year on Broadway. So we've kind of coordinated the two events together, which is really going
to
be fun.
Yeah, I'll have to see it the next time I'm there. Now, your part is played by an actress named Jen Colella. Colella. Okay. Did you work closely with her and the writers to make sure your portrayal was accurate?
I did not meet Jen Colella until the night before I saw the show for the first time, and that was when it premiered in La Jolla, which was the summer of 2015. And I had talked to the writers, you know, a couple of times, but I didn't really understand how a Broadway show went from infancy to the Broadway stage. You know, I didn't know a lot about that. So we got a call in the summer of 2015 from the producers, and they said, remember that young couple that you did the interview with in Gander on the 10th anniversary? And I said, well, yes, of course, the young playwrights. And they said, well, they've written a musical, and we'd like to invite you to the world premiere opening in La Jolla. So off we go to San Diego. I did not know one thing about the show. I didn't know that I was portrayed in it. I knew nothing. So, oh, my gosh, the first time we watched it was just incredible.
Yeah. Dan?
Well, I was surprised when I heard Come From Away was a musical. Do you think that was a better venue than a regular play to tell the story of what happened at Gander?
Well, I don't think anybody could have imagined that there would be a musical written about this event. I mean, it is just unimaginable, but that was really what Michael Rubinoff with Sheridan Theater from Sheridan College, that was his vision from the very beginning. and he pitched it to several playwrights, and they wouldn't touch it with a 10-foot pole. And then, you know, he pitched it to David and Irene, and they agreed to do it. They only had one other show under their belt, which was also a musical. And, you know, when you see people in the theater watching the show, it is just magnificent. People are so happy and so enthusiastic, and most people say that it brings closure to such a tragic event. And as the writers will tell you, they could not do a story about Newfoundland without it being a musical, because music is so much a part of what they do in Newfoundland on those cold winter nights that they have a lot of. They play music. It's just their culture.
And, Bev, there was a book, too, The Day the World Came to Town, and a Canadian TV movie called Diverted, plus a BBC radio play, The Day the Planes Came. Were you involved with those as well, and how different is Come From Away?
You know, I have read the book, The Day the World Came to Town, and it came out really right after 9/11, and I thought that he did a marvelous job with it. I am in the book, but I was not consulted about anything. you know, it's just a very benign comment and everything, but I thought the book was great. I did not see the movie, but there's also been a book recently written by one of the passengers on the plane, and he is also portrayed in the show, and it's called Channel of Peace by Kevin Turf. So it is a new book that has just been published and is quite popular right now. But, you know, also Tom Brokaw did Operation Yellow Ribbon, which was a documentary on Gander, and it aired during the Vancouver Olympics, and that was a beautiful piece that was done by NBC.
Right.
Oh, that's great to know. I want to tell our listeners that you're listening to Travel It Radio with Dan Schlossberg and Maggie Linton. Find the archive show on blogtalkradio.com or check out Travel It Radio on Facebook. We're also on iTunes. And our guest tonight is Captain Beverly Bass, formerly of American Airlines, and the real-life inspiration for the hit Broadway musical Come From Away. Beverly, you live in Texas, but you've been traveling a lot with the show. In fact, I met you in Charlotte at the ABA convention last month. But is it true you're going back to work, or were you on a leave of absence? What happened with American Airlines?
Oh, no. I retired from American in 2008. And, you know, I was retired for quite a few years until I got this recent job, you know, flying the private jet. So I just, you know, I'm a contract pilot, and so I work my jet trips around all the PR stuff that I'm able to do with Come From Away right now. In fact, I just got in from Cleveland last night from another event similar to where I met you in Charlotte. And, you know, because of the national tour that's going to be starting in October of this year, all the theaters are announcing their 2018 and 19 seasons. And so that's what we're there. We're there promoting Come From Away that's going to open in oh, gosh, I don't even know how many cities, but I know it's already booked for 92 weeks.
Wow. That's
I know.
More than a year.
It's crazy. Yeah. It's
but
just,
if you've got a great thing, and it's something that's never going to go away, you know, that so it's there, and it's a story to be told. But getting back to your own experience, what was the original destination of your flight from where to where and before it was diverted to Gander in Newfoundland?
Right. I was going from Paris, France to Dallas, Texas, and we were literally right over the middle of the North Atlantic when we heard on our air-to-air frequency that one of the towers had been hit. And, you know, like a lot of people, we thought it was a light airplane, and not that that's not significant, but, you know, nobody ever imagined it would be an airliner. And then about 20 minutes later, we heard the second tower had been hit, and with that came the word terrorism, and that's that's when life changed for all of us.
Mm-hmm. Well, was it hard for you to get back into the cockpit once the FAA allowed you to?
Absolutely not. When I landed in Dallas, I called American Airlines the next day, and I said, I'm ready to go wherever you want to send me. I really wanted to fly one of the first 777 flights out. And they said, you know, we think you ought to take a few days off. But I absolutely was not going to let I wasn't going to let them ruin what I love so much and continue to love today. And I couldn't wait to fly again and was never apprehensive about it, never.
Now, I have to just ask one question real quick, and that's, do you think that the way the Canadians and the folks from Newfoundland received you helped you with the healing almost immediately?
Oh, you know, it was just, that could very well be because, you know, while the U.S. was suffering through such a dreadful tragedy, nobody knew what was happening to us just north of the border. We were treated so beautifully with so much kindness and generosity and friendships that have been formed that will literally last a lifetime. I mean, some of the people that I met in Gander have been to my home in Texas and stayed here with me. One of the air traffic controllers who was responsible for our airplane and passengers on 9/11, he and his wife, Pat Woodford and Glenda, have been here and stayed with me in Texas. So we have formed lifetime friendships, and it just has really been a magnificent, you know, has been great with regard to the healing process of 9/11.
Yeah, that's wonderful. Dan?
Bev, I know pilots always have to tell their passengers, you know, how to keep them calm in a crisis. When you found out what happened, how did you tell your passengers?
Well, you know, that was a real concern. It was one of the hardest PAs I've ever had to make because I had to protect my flight attendants at all costs. You know, I sit behind a cockpit door, and whatever I said on the PA was going to affect the flight attendants, not me. So I called the lead flight attendant up to the cockpit. I told her what I was preparing to say and asked her if she was comfortable with that because I made up my mind early on I was not going to lie to the passengers, which some captains chose to do, which was fine. That is just the decision they made, but I wasn't going to lie. So I basically just said, you know, ladies and gentlemen, this is Captain Bass. There has been a crisis in the United States. We'll be landing our airplane in Gander, Newfoundland, and I'll get back to you with more information as soon as we get on the ground. And it seemed to work fine. It didn't cause any havoc in the back of the airplane. And, you know, when we got on the ground, we still didn't know much more because, you know, very few people had cell phones, and we really didn't have access to a whole lot of information for a very long time.
Yeah.
And, Bev, is it true you lost a friend when the 9/11 hijackers crashed American Airlines Flight 77 into the Pentagon?
I did. Chick Burlingame was the captain on that airplane, and we actually lived in the same apartment building in New York, and we were hired about the same time at American. And he was the only crew member that I knew in the two airplanes that we lost that day. But, yes, I had just seen him at a pub in London just a couple of weeks before the event.
We're talking with Captain Beverly Bass, formerly of American Airlines, and still flying at age 66, which is just incredible. Is there a mandatory retirement age for American?
Well, with the airlines, you have to retire at 65. And I actually retired when I was 56, so I went early because, you know, after 9/11, all of the airlines filed bankruptcy, and we were actually the last of the majors to file. But, you know, we were, you know, concerned about our retirement and everything. So probably about 400 pilots retired before mandatory retirement age just because of, you know, the economic situation after 9/11. We have what we call in the airline business the lost decade. The airlines went 10 years without hiring a pilot because it took that long for us to recover from the events of 9/11.
Yeah. Well, the message of the show is that the Canadians, and you have said it over and over again, smothered thousands of strangers with kindness. So is it true you had a 10th anniversary reunion in 2011?
Yes, absolutely. We went back to Gander, and, of course, that's when I met David and Irene, the playwrights. But, Oh, my goodness, you know, I just thought we were going back. I was going to show my husband the Comfort Inn and the only restaurant that I ate in for 5 days. But little did I know when we got there, there was one event after the next. And I don't want to say that they celebrate 9/11, but they honor it in a beautiful way because for them, it is significant of all the beautiful things and how wonderfully they took care of all the passengers during that time.
Do they have more
hotels? And speaking
hotels?
Of passengers, oh, go ahead, Maggie.
Do they have more hotels, or are they still down to the Comfort Inn?
No, they have the same. We stay at the Comfort Inn every time we go.
Okay. Dan, go ahead.
Well, speaking
I just had
of passengers,
to ask that.
Yeah, I hear two passengers stranded in Gander actually wound up getting married, and that passengers created scholarships and donated money in their effort to thank the people of Newfoundland. Can you tell us more about that?
They did. The scholarship was actually formed on Delta Flight 15, and they took up a collection on the plane, and that scholarship money has now grown to over $1.5 million. And I can't remember the details of it, but I think a certain amount of kids who graduate from Gander have a full ride scholarship to college as a result of that Delta flight. It was wonderful. And then two people did get married, Diane Davis and Nick Marson. They met on a Continental flight. And, in fact, they met, I believe, at the commissary when they were going to pick up prescription medicines or something. And they just fell in love. And he was actually living in London, England at the time, and she lived in Houston, Texas. And they just couldn't make the long-distance relationship work. So he transferred job-wise to Houston. He proposed over the phone, and they got married, and they honeymooned in Newfoundland.
Oh,
what a great story.
Yeah.
And Bev, were the stranded passengers...
Well.
Oh, go ahead.
I'm sorry, go ahead, Bev.
No, that's also portrayed in the show. So that's what's so fabulous about, you know, Come From Away, is there are so many beautiful stories entwined within the musical.
Yeah.
Were the stranded passengers mostly American, or were there a lot of Europeans too?
Oh, a lot of Europeans, a lot. As a matter of fact, some of the flights that were coming from Europe to the U.S., they actually, when we were cleared to go, they had to go back to Europe. They didn't actually complete their trip to the U.S. So, you know, it was different for them. But the U.S. airplanes got to go to their U.S. destination, you know, which I was one of those. So it was good. Mm-hmm. But you didn't know at the time. You didn't know if you were going to be sent back to France or continue on to Dallas.
So who came up with the nickname the Plane People?
The Ganderites did. That's what they call us, the P-L-A-N-E, the Plane People. Yes. And they still call us that. It is so funny. It's great.
It definitely describes you. Well, how do you feel about the present state of airline security now?
Oh, you know, I think it's so sad every time I'm standing in a security line for 35 minutes and every airport is different. You know, some you have to take off your shoes. You don't have to take off your shoes. You have to take off your belt. You don't have to take – I mean, it's the most confusing thing. And I say all the time, I hope in my lifetime that there will be a streamlined version of airport security. I would like to think in my lifetime that there will come a point where you can literally just walk straight through a machine and – not have to go through all this rigmarole. It really is very frustrating, and I understand the public, you know, doesn't like it either, but it's the best of what we have right now, and we have to have something that's very stringent.
Yeah, and to protect us all. So,
absolutely.
How long were you actually with American, and how did you decide to become a pilot?
I was with American 32 years. I was hired when I was 24 years old, and I, from the time I was 8 years old, told my parents I wanted to be a pilot. I don't remember a time in my life when I wasn't obsessed with airplanes. I just, as a little kid, loved them, and nobody in my family flew. My dad drove PT boats in the Navy, so not even close to flying, but I just loved airplanes. I begged anybody I could to take me out to the airport and park by the chain link fence and watch them take off and land. And so when I was 19, I drove myself to the airport and signed up for flight lessons, and the rest is history.
And boy, did you make history.
Oh,
Dan?
My gosh.
Yeah, you really did.
But I think so.
Yeah.
Well, Bev, at the time that you started, wasn't it rather unusual to have a woman pilot?
You know, it was. I was the third pilot hired by American in 76. And there were probably about 16 or 17 other female pilots in the country at that time that were flying for the airlines. So, you know, we were oddities. There's no question about it. You know, we were stared at, smiled at, laughed at, whispered about as we walked through the terminals. And, you know, but it was also a very proud time because we knew that we were doing something that, you know, not everybody had had the chance to do before us, you know, as far as women being able to fly for the airline. So we were very lucky that the timing worked out for us. And, you know, in 78, I started an organization with another female pilot from Braniff. Her name was Stephanie Wallach. And the two of us started an organization called International Society of Women Airline Pilots. We had our first meeting in Las Vegas in 78. There were 21 people that came to the first convention, and we are getting ready to celebrate our 40th convention in Las Vegas again. And now we have a membership of, oh, I guess around 500 people. And we do a lot of mentoring for young female aviators. And we, our tiny organization, has given over $1 million in scholarship money for young women who want to become airline pilots. And of those scholarship winners, 75 are flying for the airlines today.
That's fantastic.
That is terrific. Really nice job.
Yes.
Bev, our listeners always like to learn a little more about Travel Itch Radio guests, so please share where you were born, raised, and educated, and how you got into being a pilot.
Sure. I was born in Fort Myers, Florida, and I left Fort Myers in 1970 to attend Texas Christian University in Fort Worth, Texas. And even though I started my flying lessons in Fort Myers, 90% of my flying was done in the Fort Worth area at Meacham Field. And then I went over to Love Field and flew night freight out of there. So I did almost all my flying in the Texas area. And my first paid flying job was flying for a mortician. I was 20 years old. I was in college. And the airplane was so small you could not fit a casket in it, so the body was on a stretcher. And I had to climb over their face to get to my seat. And I got paid $5 an hour. And I was so proud of that job because it was the first time somebody was paying me to fly an airplane. And that was really the start of my flying career. You know, somebody actually gave me a chance. And even though it was flying dead bodies, it was great at the time. It's not something I would want to do today. But back then, I thought it was fabulous.
That's
Maggie,
fantastic.
Last question for Bev.
No, Dan, you're running out of time. I need to shut up. I just want to tell you, Bev, I admire you so much, and that you have been an inspiration for a number of women. And the very first time I ever was on a plane and they announced it was a woman pilot, everybody stood up and cheered and applauded.
Oh,
so it was just wonderful. It was a Southwest Airlines flight, but it was fantastic.
I love hearing that. Mm-hmm. That is fabulous. Thank you so much.
So you're a trailblazer, and we thank you for everything you've done.
Oh, my gosh.
Yes, and
well,
Beverly, you're a real-life heroine as well, so thank you for that as well.
Oh, I don't think of myself like that, but thank you very much for the wonderful compliment.
Okay,
yeah,
and we've been
you.
Talking tonight with Captain Beverly Bass, the real-life inspiration for the hit musical Come From Away. It's a great show. Make sure you go see it. Thank you, Beverly, for visiting with us tonight.
You are so welcome. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye. And that's it for this edition of Travel Itch Radio. Tune in again next week, same time, same station, when we'll head down to Kissimmee, Florida, and learn all about the gorgeous Reunion Resort. Now, this is Dan Schlossberg, along with my longtime friend Maggie Linton, saying thank you for your time this time. Until next time, good night.
Does your bank make you come into the bank? If the answer is yes, maybe the best bank for you isn't a bank at all. Westcom Credit Union has the latest online banking tools and mobile apps. And Westcom's federally insured by NCUA. Certain terms may apply.
Next, New Ellen, Heidi Klum from America's Got Talent, plus Melissa Etheridge and Olivia Munn from The Predator.
Just the thought of it makes me shudder.
Ellen, today at 3 on NBC4. And
we know your life is bumper to bumper. You need someone working for you. That's why NBC4 gives you 2.5 hours of news starting at 4 p.m. We're working around your afternoons with breaking news and the most accurate weather in town. NBC4 News at 4 for you.